twisty, thin ribbons of rural ground connecting cities. That's what a lot of the Illinois congressional districts look like in the Democratic draft map released today. Republicans are howling. That story just ahead on WGLT's Sound Ideas. Good afternoon. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The mayor of Normal wants a second census count next year. He's not sure the current one is right. Rocker Bob Mould draws parallels to the 1980s AIDS crisis and the early years of the Trump administration on his latest album.
You know, everybody was getting singled out and demonized again, and I went through that once, and it's no fun.
John Norton talks with Mould before a Bloomington concert, and hear from the new diversity and inclusion director at Unit 5 Schools. Those stories and a Bloomington Normal News update just ahead. This is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas, on 89.1 FM and WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Illinois' new congressional maps are out, and they heavily favor Democrats. Bloomington Normal is wrapped into a district with Peoria, the Quad Cities, and a portion of the Rockford area. Those urban centers favor a Democrat. Current area Republican Congressman Rodney Davis would now represent largely rural areas, stretching from his hometown of Taylorville through Danville on the eastern border of the state, and snaking back west and north all the way to Freeport. Bloomington Normal's other U.S. Representative, Darren LaHood, is also drawn into a largely rural and Republican district, stretching from east of Rantoul, west through the rural areas of McLean County, and to the western border of the state at Quincy. Tim Shelley speaks with Monmouth College political science professor Robin Johnson about what all this means.
Well, to the winners go the spoils, and in Illinois that means they get to draw the map, the party in control. And the Democrats, of course, have control of both houses of the legislature, veto-proof majorities. They also control the governor's office. In spite of the governor's promises during his campaign to oppose gerrymandering and putting a map together, he's indicated he's going to sign this map. So it looks like the Democrats did what the Republicans will do in other states where they control the process, is to try to maximize the number of their party being elected. And it looks like it's done to maximum effect in that range, with, I think, the goal is to try to create, out of 17 districts, 14 Democratic, and it looks like they've tried to do that.
So the three Republican districts would be the 16th, the 15th, and I think down in Southern Illinois, the 12th.
Yeah, I don't know the specific numbers. I haven't seen numbers attached to them yet, but that sounds right, because most of the Republican support over the years has shifted downstate from in the suburban areas. And they'll try to consolidate the Republican downstate rural vote in the three districts. The district in the one district that I'll be included in is I was formerly in the 17th. Now I'm going to be in one that goes just north of St. Louis and all the way over in the Champaign area.
It looks to me like the 16th district, the one we're talking about, it puts Darren LaHood and Mary Miller in the same district, if I'm looking at this accurately.
Yeah, that would be no surprise. Again, the party in control tries to not only maximize their numbers, but oftentimes puts Republicans in the same districts. They did that with the state legislative map, and they're doing this with the congressional map as well. To create intra-party primaries.
Yeah, so that ultimately takes some of the heat off of, Democrats in the general, with the Republican primary candidates kind of beat up each other in the primary, so to speak.
Yeah, it's another advantage inherent if both candidates run, to spend resources and to take each other on instead of putting all the resources together for a challenge against, the opposite party. But in cases like this, the chances of a Democrat winning that district are really low. So the primary winner will be strong likelihood that person will win the general election.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at this, then you kind of mentioned the overall trends across the country as Democrats kind of try to shore up their majority, and Republicans, I guess, are doing the same in states where they control the remapping process. We're just seeing this happen kind of more and more to an extreme level, aren't we, where people are drawing their districts like this?
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure on Illinois to produce as many Democratic districts as possible. The same with New York, even though they have an independent commission. So the Republicans are going to be doing this in states like Ohio, Florida, Texas. So, it's too bad. This isn't good overall. This creates further pressures. This further fuels the partisan divide in our country, where people that have heavily partisan districts one way or the other don't face real competition that might get them to move to the center more. If your only competition is in a primary from somebody to the extreme left or right, you're going to be trying to move that way also to protect your flank. And this just continues to fuel this partisan divide in our country, which really it's approaching dangerous levels with what's been going on. And I understand the Democrats in Illinois will be saying, well, you know, the Republicans are doing this elsewhere and all. Maybe we do need more of a national solution to this to try to get more independent type map making.
That was political science professor Robin Johnson speaking to Tim Shelley about the new congressional map proposal. It goes before lawmakers next week. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The early census numbers show the town of Normal has gained just 28 people since the last census a decade ago. Mayor Chris Coos says that is concerning, if true, and also if not.
We're kind of concerned at the numbers, and we're not alone in communities in Illinois and throughout the United States in the sense that because we had a better capture of Illinois State University students as a result of the pandemic, we were able to get more information out of the university system to count students. We felt like we were probably capturing 45 to 50% of the population in the numbers, and we were fairly confident that we had 100% in this number. So that alone gave us cause to worry. Plus the fact that Rivian has brought in a lot of people into the community. The housing market is so incredibly tight. We're concerned that the numbers may not really reflect what happened.
Of course, it's important for the town because certain federal allocations are dependent on the census estimate. Do you go for a special count in a year or two as and pay for it yourself? Pay for the town?
We'll likely do that regardless, given the growth in manufacturing that's happening in the community. We'll likely do that if those numbers are the final numbers.
So statewide, the picture is that the birth rate is below replacement rate.
Right.
We're about middle of the pack for states that lost population in terms of the population loss. What we're not doing is catching people moving in. We're at the bottom of the list. How is Normal and Bloomington reflective of that part of the population equation?
Well, you know, I think there's certainly some forces that have happened in the community over the last 10 years. You know, there has been a significant out-migration of State Farm employees, and we certainly acknowledge that as part of the issue. But again, I think probably the thing we'll hang our hat on the most is the fact that we got a much more robust count of Illinois State University students, and it doesn't seem like it's reflected in the numbers.
Academic experts, though, say that the Census Department really did crunch numbers and revise its algorithm to account for that, and that the data really are pretty liable.
Okay.
Are you buying that?
Well, I don't know. Again, we'll have a better understanding once we get the census tract demographics.
So how do you encourage people to stay here instead of move out? And how do you urge them to stay here after college? And how do you encourage them to move in?
Well, that's been an imperative of ours and mine ever since I've been elected. And so those issues are quality of life issues, tax issues. Those are job opportunity issues. And actually some climate issues probably play into that as well. That one we can't do anything about, but the others we can. And I think we've been fairly successful in allowing growth to happen in a high quality life sense. We're more attractive We hear it from people that are Rivian transplants that come from all over the country. They like living here at this point.
That's Chris Coos, the mayor of Normal, here on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. A Unit 5 administrator hired this year to focus on inclusivity tells the school board the district's equity action plan approved this fall is moving forward on several fronts. Crystal Shelvin is Unit 5's director of diversity, equity, and inclusion. In this interview with Michelle Steinbacher, Shelvin says one reason the plan has momentum is because so many stakeholders are invested.
One piece that's so unique about this district is that we have not just one or two people. District equity leadership team is comprised of staff and administrators across the board and family coordinators who really are looking and reporting back what they're hearing in their buildings. So it's not just, oh, the district office pushes out a training, just accept it and go. We really are looking at making sure the training is useful.
What is the equity action plan? What do we mean when we talk about equity in the Unit 5 school district?
We're really talking about making sure that our mission, our vision really are applicable to all students. So expanding our definition of personal excellence really includes everyone. Students who have some differences in their background, whether it's regarding learning style, learning differences, racial, ethnic differences, language differences. We really define diversity broadly.
How is this plan going to be implemented? What data are you looking at?
We presented some information from the equity audit that was completed in the district. There's a comprehensive report that talks about where there's some disparities, there are particular subgroups who need a little more attention. So when we look at the data district-wide, our focus in being more equitable is to drill down and see, okay, we have these great results. Is that equitably distributed? Or are there students for whom we need to look at different ways of approaching academics or discipline? Are there other things that we could do?
What are some key takeaways that the community should know after this long involved audit? What came out of it?
So we find out that our students who are receiving free or reduced lunches are not participating as much in our extracurricular activities. We know extracurricular activities promote a deeper connection with schools. So what is the reason why they aren't participating? We find out that our students who are African-American are receiving more exclusionary disciplinary infractions. Where is the reason why? Because we know that it's not a matter of simply having more behaviors. There are some systemic things that we can change to support that. And how do we ensure that the pre-work or the proactive work is done so that we don't have our African-American students disproportionately represented in exclusionary, disciplinary, so suspension, expulsion, but really, so how do we work at the front end so that we understand what those behaviors are communicating? And then with special education eligibilities, how do we ensure that that population is representative and not a group, you know, where there's one particular group who has more access to special education services and one group who really is missed or has less access? And that can be for a host of reasons.
When we talk about the strand that is family and community, how will Unit 5 be incorporating that into the Equity Action Plan?
Family and community as agency really focuses on making sure that the communication is two-way. So not only that we are more successful with getting messages out in the family's preferred language, but also making sure that all of our resources are accessible so that language is not a barrier.
How many languages are spoken in Unit 5?
More than 30 languages across the district.
The teachers and staff, how can they make classrooms more equitable?
If folks in our buildings, and that's all levels of staff, don't understand what diversity is, it's hard to move the needle toward providing more equitable services. And so that's where we start, is with a lot of professional development, some systemic changes, ensuring that we're working hard to diversify staff. It is a pretty comprehensive, multi-pronged approach. So not only diversifying staff, but increasing the capacity of the staff we have currently.
Does the Equity Action Plan also address working in Unit 5?
Not only do we look at recruiting, but we look at retention. Why is it that some of the staff who've come in who are from minoritized groups, diverse populations, why do they come in and leave? And how do we do some stay interviews? How do we do some support, provide affinity groups, or some ways of keeping folks connected within the community and within the district so that they want to continue to work here? In addition to that, we want to make sure that we're talking and have elevating the voices of diverse staff.
Why did Unit 5 choose to create this equity action plan?
One, it's the right thing to do. A spotlight on some of the inequities that are going on throughout the nation currently. We realize and recognize that we're no different. A school is often a reflection of the community in which it's situated. And so we want to make sure that we figure out how to help not just some students, but all students achieve personal excellence. And we have to really be transparent about the data and about what's going on so that we can identify what the root causes are and then address them.
Crystal Shelvin, the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Director for Unit 5 Schools, says next steps for the Equity Action Plan include a spring launch of equity-focused professional development, efforts to recruit a diverse citizens advisory Council, and developing a student equity leadership team. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Rocker Bob Mould draws parallels to the 1980s AIDS crisis and the early years of the Trump administration on his latest album, Blue Hearts. No song more explicitly so than the breakout song, American Crisis. Ahead of his show in Bloomington tonight, the Husker Du founder spoke with WGLT's John Norton. Mould says as a young closeted gay man in the 1980s, he remembers the silence of the Reagan administration while misinformation about AIDS was allowed to spread.
Never fun to be told that you're less than. Never fun to be told God created this to punish you for something that was sort of out of your own hands. And I felt like we were headed back in that direction with the previous political administration in America. You know, that old joke about deja vu all over again. There wasn't anything terribly funny about it because it really felt familiar, you know, that people who, are in, a minority situation, people of color, people of different sexual preference, economic inequity, everybody was getting singled out and demonized again. And, I went through that once and it's no fun. And I felt it was important to draw, parallels.
How does that mess with you or someone? How does that affect you in your life moving forward?
Well, again, in my early 20s, there was no confusion in my mind that I was a homosexual. Did I understand the gay lifestyle? Not as much as I should have. But, by the end of the 1980s, I had a better sense of who I was and, how I could use my voice to at least explain myself in the context of being different and hoping that people would be able to relate to it.
Bob, I have a technical question for you. You're saying some really powerful things in your music and some of it very pointed. Yet the vocals tend to be mixed quite low in the song itself, like American Crisis, for example, making it a little bit difficult to understand the lyrics. Why so?
Well, first I always include lyric sheets with the albums, and the lyrics are always available online. Having said that, my approach to making aggressive guitar music is I don't want the vocals to overwhelm the power of the guitars, of the cymbals, of all that distortion. I always try to fit my voice in as if it is just another instrument. So sometimes they sit a little bit lower than your normal pop song.
It's been tough over the last 4 years to listen to new music and not read, you know, the political times into songs, whether they're actually there or not. You're kind of like, is he getting at something here? Is she getting at something here? And you're unabashedly political on Blue Hearts and during interviews. You're not subscribing to the philosophy of shut up and play the music, right? Why do you feel the need to be so explicit about your politics?
These are serious times. There's a lot riding on, you know, truth and proper information and how we, you know, critical thinking. I mean, you know, if we just read headlines and we just doom scroll for the rest of our lives, we're not going to have much knowledge to you know, at our hands to make informed decisions. I think it's really important to me, you know, and especially when I think back to the 80s and I think back to Reagan and AIDS and HIV and how little I feel like I did not do enough at the time. You know, fast forwarding up to now, I'm not going to sit back and not be heard. I think I did not do enough back then, and I'm not going to have that nagging at me this time.
You know, some people say, I don't want to, you know, alienate the right or the left. I'm just going to keep politics out. And you're just total opposite. This is who I am. This is what I need to talk about. And you're unabashedly doing that.
Yes. And I think these are the times. I think we all have to say what's on our mind. I don't expect all of my fans to agree with me. And if I lose some longtime fans because they view the world through a different lens than I do, and we can't get to a middle ground, it's been great. I'm sorry I let you down, but life goes on.
That's Bob Mould speaking with WGLT's John Norton. Mould plays a solo show at the Castle Theater in Bloomington tonight. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.